walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animal.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Dr. Jennifer Conrad, the veterinarian and founder of the Paw Project, which was established more than a dozen years ago, chiefly to educate the public about the painful and crippling effects of feline decline. Dr. Conrad has been a guest on Talking Animals several times over the years, largely because the horrors of declaw need to be repeated regularly so that more and more folks get the message. But also, Dr. Conrad's appearances are often tied to notable developments in the anti-declaw world and or the Paw Project world. For example, her last appearance on the show was to discuss the documentary she's made, also called the Paw Project, an acclaimed film that chronicled the organization's work, including leading efforts to persuade West Hollywood to become the first U.S. city to ban declaw surgery. Today, we're likely to discuss legislative efforts on a larger level, including a bill pending in New Jersey that could, if it goes through, result in the first statewide declaw ban. We'll find out more about this and other legislative work the Paw Project is supporting and guiding, and what other inroads are being made on this vitally important issue when I speak with Dr. Jennifer Conrad in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later, I'll be playing an extra long, wonderful piece in the Comedy Corner and offering a Talking Animals t-shirt as the prize in Name That Animal Tune. On a different programming note, later today I'll be sitting in for Scott Elliott on the All Souls edition of It's the Music from 1 to 3:30 p.m. this afternoon right here on WMF. Right now, though, let's get to Dr. Conrad and the Paw Project with the reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Dr. Jennifer Conrad back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Dr. Conrad.
Good morning, Duncan. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. You know, as of today, I was looking this over, between full-length interviews and I think at least one short one we did, you've been on Talking Animals, I think, more than any other guest. So congrats on entering that rarefied turf. Sadly, there's no special award to present you, but the next time we see each other at a conference, I will buy you a cup of coffee or something. So
okay, I'll count on that.
Cool. In all seriousness, though, I'm glad you've become a major presence on this program because it's really, really important to tell and retell what exactly declaw surgery is and what impact it has on the cat in question. So, of course, I want you to deliver that information once again. But as a prelude, can you remind me, I was thinking back given all your appearances on the show, can you remind me exactly how the declaw issue first became so important to you, how it first sort of became your cause?
Well, I was working in a wildlife sanctuary, and I had 40 big cats who were all in various stages of being crippled because they were declawed. And I asked the veterinarian who was there before I was and said, what's going on? And she said, well, that's just what happens when you declaw a cat, they just get crippled. And I thought, wait a second, we're doing this to them and we know this was what happened. And that sort of launched me on a crusade to stop this from happening because I really love kitties. And I think everyone who loves kitties should know that this is a horrible thing that we're doing to them, and it's certainly unnecessary.
Yeah, so I guess maybe along the way as part of this, we will talk about big cats being declawed and then just people's cats that are lying on their couch right now as we're speaking to them or whatever. So in fact, yeah, so let's do some remedial stuff right off the bat and then kind of fan out from there into how the Paw Project has evolved and again, particularly some of the more important legislative efforts of late. So when we talk about declawing a cat, what does that really mean?
Well, it's not at all declawing. It's a total misnomer. I think it's a sales pitch to call it only declawing because it really should be called de-knuckling. It is cutting off the last bone in every one of your cat's toes, because unlike our nails, which grow from skin, cat nails grow from the bone. So in order to remove the germinal tissue, you have to remove the bone.
Yikes. I mean, already hopefully that's getting through to people who maybe are hearing this for the first time. But another way to put it, if not, is that it really is amputation of a sort.
It's an amputation of the last bone in every one of your cat toes. It is one of the most painful routinely performed surgeries in all of veterinary medicine. And yet 30% of veterinarians use no pain medication whatsoever.
At any point in the procedure?
Exactly, because as you know, cats are very often highly stoic animals. And so a veterinarian or an owner might perceive an animal who's curled up and sleeping and even purring as comfortable when they don't understand that curled up and sleeping and purring can be the exact opposite. It could be that the cat is in excruciating pain. It's just that the purring is now for self-soothing as opposed to pleasure.
Okay, so that's awful enough. Some people are hearing this for not the first time, but those who are, I'm sure, are already taken aback, especially if they, well, hopefully none of them listening have declawed their cats, but anyone who was thinking about it, and we'll get into maybe some of the reasons that people do in a moment. But beyond that horrible pain, and again, the cats being so stoic and giving the maybe the false impression with that kind of purr, what else happens to that cat that has undergone the procedure?
Well, just to reiterate the amount of pain that declawing, I just want to make sure that this is clear, is that declawing is used by many studies, like the FDA has all the studies for pain medications, the clinical trials. Declawing is used for those studies because it is so routinely done and it is so predictably painful. So what the poor cat has now suffered a minimum of 10 amputations if they just did the 10 front toes. And now the conformation of the cat has changed. You know, a cat walks on the joint between the first and second bone in its toes. So when you remove that bone, you can imagine that everything changes. And now they're going to have arthritis in their spines. They're going to change how their shoulders are, their elbows are. It changes everything. And these cats go home from surgery and they jump in to go to use the litter box and they start to dig and it hurts so much that they decide, I am never using that again. And then they realize that they don't have any way to protect themselves, and so they bite. And so these cats, because they were declawed, are very often found in the shelters because they've lost their homes because they're biting or they're not using the litter box.
So with that in mind, let's back up. Maybe I should have even asked this a moment ago, but what are the reasons people typically cite for wanting their cats declawed?
Well, I think that most people who want their cats declawed think it's the right thing to do for an animal. For instance, the veterinarian has sold a package of spay, neuter, declaw vaccine. So they think that they're doing the right thing. But I think also the name declawing makes people think it's a simple surgery of removing the nails. And they think, well, if I just remove the cat's nails, then I don't have to worry about it scratching the furniture or pulling down the curtains. You know, all the things that are normal for a cat to do, they are now going to deprive them of. And what I think is so stunning is that people will jump right to declawing a cat, but they would never think about detoothing a puppy. And, you know, puppies are very destructive, too. Until they learn what is theirs to chew, a puppy could chew on a couch or a slipper or anything in the house. And until a cat learns what is that cat's property to scratch, like a proper scratching post, scratching pad, then the cat's going to use the couch. And but no one thinks about detoothing a puppy when it's made a mistake.
It's a really interesting point, too, that maybe we have talked about in past times. I don't recall this, but the idea that there'd be a package that people would get when they first adopt a cat, hey, spay, neuter, vaccine, and as part of that, there's declaw. So again, if depending on how much you knew about this, especially if you didn't really know anything about the horrors of declaw, you'd say, well, hey, this is what we do when we get a new cat or adopt a new cat. We get this all squared away and then they're ready to roll and live at the house. So, because yeah, as you say, I mean, if there was a package that had the same thing, but it included detoothing the puppy, yeah, people would be up in arms.
Exactly. So there's this hypocrisy because dogs are very often demonstrative of their pain. I mean, people know when a dog is in pain, but cats, it's the opposite. And unless you're in tune to the fact that cats don't really display pain very well compared you know, they're not demonstrative unless they're in excruciating pain. And then you see it in the vet hospitals after they've been declawed. You see the cats coming out of anesthesia and they are flinging their paws because of the blood and they want their paws off of them. It's like they can't stand it. They can't stand it. And then once, if an owner were to see that, then that owner would never declaw ever again.
I have a specific question tied to this, but let me first let folks know, I might just be tuning in the last few minutes. This is Talk Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you did just tune in, my guest is Dr. Jennifer Conrad, the veterinarian and founder of the Paw Project, and we're talking about some of the painful and crippling and sort of horrible effects, basically, of feline declawing. If you'd like to ask Dr. Conrad a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email DJ at WMNF.org or text 813-433-0885. So, having said what you've said, are there scenarios, Dr. Conrad, whether tied to the human's medical condition that lives at that house or some other factor, where you would make an allowance for declawing a cat, or is there just never a case where that would make sense?
It never makes sense to declaw a cat to protect human health. The CDC, the NIH, U.S. Public Health Services, the Canadian Medical Association, the Infectious Diseases Society of America all agree that declawing is not advised as a way to protect human health. Why? Well, declawed cats don't use the litter box, so that is a big problem, and declawed cats bite more, so that is a big problem. And if you call the emergency room and you say, I got bitten by my cat, they will say, come in. But if you call and say, I got scratched by my cat, they will say, wash it and watch it. So the difference is stunning. Also, remember that in the rest of the world, like in the UK, for instance, Europe, even much of South America, declawing is illegal or just not performed. And those people seem to be able to live with clawed cats without dying from cat scratches. Also, the other thing that's really important to remember is that cat scratch fever is a total misnomer. That disease comes from infected flea feces getting into any wound. It could easily have been called paper cut fever, and then cats would have been less vilified.
So again, as with most things, it's a matter of being educated. And so, I mean, but that's why I kind of wanted to ask what was obviously, you know, a rhetorical question about a medical condition or something, just because I know there are people who have had the decloth done because one or more people living in the home did have a medical issue. So again, it's not the right thing to do, but that was their rationale. But a lot of people, the rationale is kind of like what you mentioned in terms of just more fundamental concerns about couches, drapes, other stuff. So the irony, of course, of that is that they're doing it, they think, to make the cat more home-friendly or whatever their thinking is. And so to halt the cat really from doing something that may make him or her unwelcome in the house. And then they get declawed. And as you've noted, then there's litter box issues, there's biting, there's all kinds of other problems. And then those cats often are out.
Right. And in fact, I know many shelter workers who will receive a call saying, we're giving up our cat because the cat's not using the box anymore. And the shelter worker will reply, when did you have him or her declawed? Because they know that's what's happened.
It's so automatic, I guess, that that's the explanation.
Right. And remember, you know, I am a veterinarian and I love veterinary medicine. I think it's a very noble profession. But there are some veterinarians who are guided by money more than by the welfare of animals. And declawing in this country is a $1 billion business a year. So you can imagine it's a quite a big fight to change it.
And we should note, in case anybody was unclear, that was billion with a B. So I figured we'd, of course, wander into this at some point. So that's another important aspect to this, beyond just the package that you mentioned where someone would say, hey, it's spay, neuter, vaccine, and vaccinate and declaw. But there is a lot at stake economically for a lot of veterinarians who make declaw an important part of their practice.
I had one veterinarian tell me that it was his bread and butter, but I don't think that's the way for most veterinarians. I think most veterinarians are trying not to do it. There are some who do it a lot, and that's why 25% of American cats are declawed. In some areas of the country, it's as high as 50%.
Oh my goodness. So, Dr. Conrad, boy, those are big, big numbers. So here's the thing I guess I'm wondering is that despite those numbers, as we've noted, we've talked a large handful of times over the years, and you and others have been trumpeting the anti-declaw message for many years on TV and film, including the film you made, social media, et cetera. So is it getting through? I mean, do you feel like inroads are being made and it's just like anything like this, it's just slow and frustrating that it's still happening, in some large numbers? Are you kind of upbeat and optimistic more?
Well, I think things are happening. I think the public is getting more and more educated. I think that the two major excuses that people use for wanting to declaw is either to protect human health, and as I said, the human health authorities do not agree with that. And the other reason that veterinarians often say that they declaw is because they are afraid of cats being relinquished. And what was very interesting, Duncan, is that in the 8 cities that have banned declawing in California, 5 of them have their own municipal shelters. And in those 5 shelters, we ask for the numbers of cats who were relinquished in the 5 years before the ban versus the number of cats relinquished 5 years after the ban. And in all 5 cities, the numbers went down. And what was remarkable is in a city as large as Los Angeles, 4.2 million people, the number went down 43.3%. So that means tens of thousands of cats were not relinquished to the shelter, as was predicted by the people who think that they have to declaw. So it's very exciting numbers to know that cats' lives might actually have been saved because of the declaw ban. I think that these common beliefs are readily refuted now that we've been working on this for so long. So I think that's why we have some traction in New Jersey and New York.
Well, I definitely want to delve into those in a moment. Let me see, we got a call and a couple of emails. Let me read one of the emails that it notes even in the subject line that is slightly off topic, but I just think maybe you could address it briefly and then we'll proceed on the topic at hand. But this says, just as declawing is unnecessary and mutilating, what are your thoughts on how we currently spay and neuter, which involves complete hysterectomies and castration on kittens as young as 8 weeks? Couldn't we be doing less invasive tubal ligations and vasectomies instead?
Well, I think that those would work to solve the population problem, but I think that the problem is that if you leave those tissues, the ovarian tissue or the testicular tissue, in the animals, that they are likely to cause cancers, like, for instance, mammary cancers. Now, there are studies in dogs that if you just take the ovaries when you do a spay, that they do not have a higher chance of having a pyometra, and then that is enough to stop them from getting mammary cancer. So I think that that's what's happening in the rest of the world. Again, the United States is used to doing a full hysterectomy and a full castration, and that's what we will do. But until the science catches up with us, I think the United States is often behind in those things because we just do what's been rote in our training.
We've always done it this way.
Yeah.
Let's get a call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Conrad.
Hello.
Hello, it's you. Please go ahead with a question or comment for Dr. Conrad.
Yes, I do. I tuned in a little late, right about 10:17, and I was, wow, fantastic, because my better half, she brought home a cat, I guess it's been 6 years ago, and when we got the cat, I like animals, but I also know their responsibility, so... when she brought the cat home, she was talking about getting it neutered and declawing it. And I was all against declawing, and I wasn't sure about the neutering until she actually started going into that cycle that they go in.
Mm-hmm.
And what the hell's going on? Oh, that's when we found out it was a girl cat, not a boy cat. So I was on board with that because I know that we really don't need to be adding more cats to the population that can't be cared for. So I was on board with that. But she kept going on about the client. I said, no, I'm still not on board with that. And I started doing a little research, and I found that overseas areas, they didn't do it. I said, that makes perfect sense to me. I mean, the good Lord put claws on them for a reason. And she doesn't scratch anything up, and she's perfectly fine. You know, she doesn't get on the countertop, and she's a good little kitty. But what's funny is that I'm responsible for the cat's daily needs. I change the litter box every day.
Mm-hmm.
I make all the vet appointments and get her to them.
Sir, I'm so sorry. We've got a lot of calls holding, some emails and stuff I need to ask Mr. Dr. Conrad. So do you have a specific question or comment about declaw for Dr. Conrad?
I just want to say thank you so much for thank you very much for being out there and being an advocate for that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your call.
Thank you. I'd like to say thank you very much for believing your intuition that it was wrong to declaw. I'm so happy that your cat still has her claws.
Yeah. So one thing, too, that I think ties into some of the stuff we talked about, how often the procedure is still done and vets that are willing to do it and or finding it a key part of the income of their practice, is conversely, Paw Project, which I should say the website is pawproject.org, lists all kinds of vets in all kinds of areas that do not do declaw. So if you're listening saying, well, okay, it sounds like it's something I shouldn't do or shouldn't do again, but where do I go? This is a great resource.
Yeah, we've compiled a massive list. And what we found, which is really interesting, and I hope if there are any veterinarians who declaw out there are listening, we found that veterinarians who give up declawing actually increase their business by as much as 10% per year that they did not expect. And that's because people are actively seeking a vet who's more humane.
Wow, isn't that interesting? So again, it's a couple of things here already that we've talked about that are sort of counterintuitive, but really, really encouraging. So as far as that goes, Dr. Conrad, with that big sprawling list, and again, it's vets across the country and in a few parts of Canada, so that also kind of constitutes the Paw Project team, right?
Well, we have a team of about 35 veterinarians who are actively working with us. But we also list all the clinics and hospitals who have given up declawing so that if you're in any city anywhere, you can find the closest one to you. I wanted to say that I've been working very actively with VCA, which is a huge animal hospital chain, and they have decided that they will give up declawing cats across the nation and in their hospitals in Canada. It's just a matter of when they will do it.
Wow.
And I'm very excited about that.
Banfield,
the other big chain, also wants to give up declawing. They just are less active about it right now. I'm very happy about both of those giant chains giving it up.
Wow, that is huge news when you get a operation that large saying, okay, we're going to stop declawing. Even if they haven't set a date, obviously I'm sure you guys are gently or not so gently pressuring them to set a date, but just the fact that at least VCA has made that commitment is terrific.
Yeah, I'm very proud of that. I just wish that they would already announce it so that...
Yeah, so it's not so just...
Because they have 800 hospitals and 4,000 doctors.
Well, that instantly alters some of those numbers that we've been talking about the minute they put their own new policy in place. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Conrad.
Hi, great show today. I had a question for Dr. Conrad.
Fire away.
Hey, Doc, have you ever tried, instead of castrating a male dog, just to remove one testicle, would that make him unproductive?
No, then the other testicle would just become bigger. But I think that there really isn't a problem with castration in most dogs. If you have a big dog, I suggest that you wait a little bit longer. As long as you don't let them breed, then I think they probably have fewer knee problems, believe it or not, if you wait longer. But don't let dogs breed because too many puppies.
Yeah, no, I've never castrated my male dogs, but I've always kept them in a fenced-in area. I have acreage. So it's easy, but every time you castrate a male dog, he becomes a boy instead of a man dog, and then he gets so fat.
That can be true, but as long as you don't let them breed, because let me just tell you, if you look at the horrors of shelters, there are...
Oh, no, I agree. I was just curious about that. Hey, I love the show. Thanks so much for your hard work.
All right, thank you so much for calling, and thanks for your question. So, Dr. Conrad, first of all, let me let folks know this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Dr. Jennifer Conrad, the veterinarian and founder of the Paw Project. We invite to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So for those listening who might not be familiar with the organization's legislative history, maybe you could briefly outline the campaign in West Hollywood, which appears now you've really built on in some significant ways, but that might be a great sort of first piece of background before we get into New Jersey, New York, et cetera?
Well, when I was repairing the paws on big cats, as I told you, from that shelter where I had 40 big cats who were all crippled, and I started repairing their paws. And the news got out in Los Angeles area that that's what I was doing. And a West Hollywood city council member's deputy heard about it. And he had just rescued a declawed cat who had been dumped. And he was interested in what it really meant to declawing. So to declaw a cat. So he was hooked. He was referred to me. And he came up to the shelter where I was working, repairing the big cat. And he saw a lioness, an African lioness, whose paws I just repaired, and she had green bandages on her paws, and she wouldn't let me take the bandages off. And I think it's because her paws felt so much better now.
Mm.
And he said, "What is declawing?" And I said, It's actually amputating the toe bone. And then I sort of looked at him and I said, kind of not realizing that I was going to change my life forever at that moment, why don't we make it illegal in West Hollywood? Because he was the deputy. And that's when it started. And from there, we went on to make it illegal in Los Angeles and Burbank, Santa Monica, Culver City, Beverly Hills, San Francisco, and Berkeley. And those eight cities are the only places in North America where declawing is illegal.
Not for long, Dr. Conrad. Not for long. Oh, so I think that's the perfect sort of entree into discussing some of the current legislative efforts. So I'm not exactly clear in terms of legislation where things stand in New Jersey. It appears poised to pass the first statewide ban on feline declawing. Is that the case, or where are we?
Well, so New Jersey, there are five steps that the bill has to make it through. It's made it through the first one. It's slated to be addressed on Monday, the 12th of December, in the second house, in the Senate. And then if it passes both of those, it will go to the floors of both of those houses, I'm hoping as early as December 19th. And then it will go to the governor's desk. The governor is Chris Christie. So I'm not sure how he will feel about it, but I do believe, as any Republican would believe, that animals have a right to bear arms just like we have a right to bear arms. So it's a Second Amendment right for cats to keep their claws. That's what my spin is on it.
Wow, I like that. And I'm going to guess, having had a great conversation a couple months back or so with Senator Lesniak, that he's probably squarely in your corner and really pushing hard on this.
I believe so. And so it's his committee that will hear it on Monday, the 12th. And if it passes through his committee, then it's slated to go to the floor of the Senate. And it already passed the Assembly Committee, so it needs to be agendized for the floor of the Assembly. It's very exciting.
So you're saying this is Senator Lesniak's committee you're talking about?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I probably haven't studied up on exactly what he's doing here, but I mean, based on his history and the kind of conversation we had, I'd be shocked if he did anything but help support and push this through.
I think so. It's really exciting. And New Jersey is New Jersey is on the road to doing this. New York, with Assemblywoman Rosenthal, again, will introduce the legislation in January, and we will push again to make this happen in New York. And wouldn't it be wonderful if the two were neck and neck and they were racing to be the first most humane state in the union?
Yeah, that's my kind of competition. So this sounds extremely promising. And again, at least the New Jersey results could be quite imminent if everything stays on track from what you've outlined here.
Yes, exactly. Now, the worry with legislation, obviously, is that anytime you have a law, it can be amended, and it can be amended before it becomes a law, and then it can become a bad law. That we are hoping it won't happen, and that's why it's important that we keep disseminating the facts that declawing does not save cats' lives and declawing does not protect human lives. Those are the two arguments that everyone uses as an excuse to declaw.
And as far as you're concerned about amending that law, if it does get that far, given the financial stakes that we've established a few different ways are significant for veterinarians and therefore the veterinarian, or at least a large part of the veterinarian industry, is there a lobbying faction that you're concerned about there that will indeed be maybe trying to amend this law if it does go through?
Well, they're going to try because they know perfectly well that an exception would swallow the rule. For instance, if the law were to say, well, you can't declaw a cat unless you really, really, really want to, which is basically what they're trying to make it say, you know, like, oh, the owner says they're going to relinquish the cat if they don't, if it can't be declawed, those exceptions are going to be abused incredibly badly and things will be status quo. So we are fighting very hard to not allow any exceptions.
Yeah.
Now, remember, the eight laws that exist in California for small cats. Now, remember, also in California, the state, we have successfully changed the law to make it that you cannot declaw a wild and exotic cat. And across the nation, we've been able to rally the USDA, which is the governing body over the anyone who just exhibits, breeds, or owns exotic cats. They're no longer allowed to declaw cats either, big cats.
Mm.
But we're trying to make sure that none of these laws are weak.
Yeah.
Because the last thing we want to do is have a weak law on the books and then have to try and change it.
Right. You get that toothless thing or some weird loophole and then you're sunk.
Thing, yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Common, let me just ask a quick question. Then we've got a few more callers and some emailers, and I know we're sort of nearing the end of our time, so I'm going to try to shoehorn as much as I can in. But obviously I'm speaking with you from Florida. How does it look here for that sort of legislation that we've talked about is right on the cusp of happening in both New Jersey and New York? For Florida?
Well, Florida is interesting because Florida has a lot of vets who are signing on to say they're no longer going to declaw, but then they also have a stronghold of vets who say, of course I declaw. It's what my clients ask for all the time. And so it's a contentious issue in Florida. I have had no legislators be interested in carrying a bill, but perhaps when they see what's happening in and the East Coast in New Jersey or New York, they might be interested in also protecting their cats.
I see. All right. So we'll have to kind of maybe have an example for them to look at to persuade them further.
Yeah, it would be great. And, you know, I'm working in California and in Oregon to get legislation moving here. And, you know, it's hard in the Midwest is where regionally they declaw way more cats than on either of the coasts. And it's as high, as I said, as 50%. One of my Paw Project Indiana veterinarian, who's based in Indianapolis, bought her practice and said that it was 80% declawed cats.
Oh, yikes. Now, I would think, before I try to get at least one or more of these callers involved, I would think that your efforts in California, with already a significant base with the eight laws in place already, wouldn't it just be a matter more of sort of expanding or essentially connecting the dots rather than going into a state like New York or New Jersey who's never had this kind of legislation even on a city level?
Right. Well, you would think so, but the problem is that the California Veterinary Medical Association is now very savvy to the declaw issue, and they've been able to lock it.
I see.
But the truth is that I have them on tape multiple times from filming the documentary, and I have them saying that they do not want a patchwork quilt, meaning they don't want some cities where it's illegal and some cities where it's not illegal to declaw. They think that would be way too confusing for Californians to know, so I'm going to use that against them.
Right.
And say, well, they're the ones who said this.
Remember when you said this back in such and such?
Yeah.
One other quick question, and then we are going to get at least one caller involved. What is there anything that we listening, whether we're in Florida or wherever we might be listening, can do to help in any way, even though we're not residents necessarily of New Jersey or New York? Are there still, without being residents, are there emails, are there phone calls, are there things we can do to help push this?
Well, I think that the most important thing that people can do is to call up their veterinarian and say, do you declaw? And if the answer is yes, say, could you please refer me to a humane veterinarian who does not declaw? And then the veterinarians begin to realize that they are losing business because they declaw. The other things that you can do are very simple things like have a classroom presentation of allowing, letting people know what declawing is, a church presentation, a screening of my film is, you know, we don't charge anything for people who want to screen the film to the public. And You can also call your city council members or your state legislators and say, why aren't we doing this too? Those sort of pressures help put it on the radar for legislators that there is a large part of the population who wants to see this banned.
Yeah.
So those are things that can do. You can also write on pawproject.org are a list of the email addresses of all the legislators.
Yeah.
You can write the one from a different state and just tell them that you support. But it really means more to legislators if they hear from their own state.
Constituents, for sure. All right, let's try to take at least one quick call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Conrad.
Hello.
Hello. Please go ahead. You have a quick question or comment for Dr. Conrad.
Yeah, comment. First of all, you might think I'm a terrible person, but I've had cats, only 5 cats in 45 years. Every one of them has been declawed. I know the doctor said that they don't use litter boxes and they bite. None of my cats have ever done that. I don't let them out. They're a loving part of my family. Now, I know it has to be painful, no doubt. But I also know the results afterwards. They're able to go anywhere in my house. They've never hurt anything. Every house I've been into that had a cat that wasn't declawed has had their furniture ruined. So, at least in my opinion, and I know that both of you disagree with me totally, I think it's worthwhile to have it done. Every one of my cats, with the exception of one, has lived to be over 20 years old, and they've been extremely happy in our home.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your comment. I'm just going to speak for myself and say you're correct in thinking I totally disagree with you, and I'm going to guess that Dr. Right. Conrad feels the same way. But it's important to get a various viewpoints in. That's why we take calls and emails and texts and stuff. So thank you so much for your input.
Thank you.
All right.
My comment to that, Jeff, is that, you know, there are so many humane alternatives that don't involve amputating your cat's toe bone. And if the furniture is so important to you, then explore those humane alternatives, because clearly your cats are important to you too. And why not use pawpaws, you know, which are little vinyl sheaths that go over the nails that protect the couch, because the cat can't get any purchase when the cat scratches? Or why not put scratching posts in the appropriate places so that the cat uses those instead of the couch? Those are humane alternatives. Then the cats could have their claws, which, regardless of how happy he thinks his cats are, remember that statistics show that these cats are in chronic pain. They just know how to adapt to it. There's no question that when you sever a nerve, which is what you have to do to cut off the bone, to cut off the nail, then that it causes what's called a neuroma, which causes a neurogenic pain. I mean, it causes pain no matter what he says. And how a cat adapts to it is, you know, a tribute to cats. They do not show how much pain they're in, but it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah.
There are many people in many fine places, like, for instance, in Beverly Hills, California, where there are very fancy couches. They don't declaw. They are not allowed to declaw. And there has not been an increase in relinquishment of cats because they can't declaw. So I would encourage him to explore the humane alternatives. He obviously loves cats. There are so many things that can be done that don't involve mutilating the cat.
Yeah. Well, again, I hope he'll consider that and consider what you've said very carefully. And Dr. Kama, we're sort of not only past our time, but way over, but I think every minute has been extremely valuable and important. And again, we should just note the website is pawproject.org, where you can find all kinds of information, whether it's legislative efforts that we've talked about or other things that people can do as alternatives to declawing, some of which you just mentioned in response to our last caller. So it's just chock full of great information. So Dr. Conrad, thank you once again for joining us on Talking Animals. We'll kind of track the New Jersey, New York thing and look for a positive outcome shortly on those.
Thank you, Duncan.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner. Last week, I presented the shortest piece I've ever played in the Comedy Corner, Tom Papa's great take on bogus service animals, so it seemed only fitting to balance that out this week by playing a longer piece than we're usually able to present. It features Jake Johansson, who spins long, wonderful yarns, even in a TV set, and it doesn't do his style justice to just play an excerpt. So from one of the many appearances on Letterman, he did more stand-up on Letterman than any other comic. Here's Jake Johansson with a piece called Whale Watching on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
Last year, I took my family on a vacation. We thought it was a good idea. We were going to go whale watching.
Give me a minute.
And, which I thought was a good idea, because I'm from the Midwest, I'm from Iowa, where whale watching was not on the menu. you could go cow watching, which does not sound that good. But let me tell you something. When you go cow watching, you see some damn cows. Right? That's right off the bat, you know where the cows are, and you go there, and they're there. And then you look at them until you're done. And so that's what I thought whale watching was going to be like. I thought, well, someone knows where the whales are, and we're going to go there, and we're going to watch them, right? That's what they call it. And they're so big, right? How can you miss them? Whales are so big. Well, whales are big, but you know what else is big? The Pacific Ocean. It turns out that thing is really big compared to the amount of whales that are in it. When you look at it that way, like, for example, I think hypothetically they could take all the whales out of the ocean and it wouldn't really go down that much, right? Well, that's what I'm saying. It wouldn't be like you went to the beach and felt like, well, did someone take the whales out of here? It's low. You wouldn't even know. But we were not thinking like that when we made the plan. We were optimistic. We thought we would pay our $50. It was $50 each to go on a 3.5-hour whale watching excursion. That's what they call it, excursion. And I thought this is going to be great. You know, we're going to be sick of looking at whales after 3.5 hours. And they don't tell you that three people are going to throw up the whole time. Seasick, right? And it turned out my daughter was the first person to throw up. Right, she's 8, and we were 20 minutes in to the 3.5-hour trip. I know, I felt terrible as a parent. I didn't see it coming, and of course, her attitude about whale watching, 180. Yeah, as soon as she threw up, she was like, Daddy, I do not want to go whale watching anymore. I want to go back to the dock, make them turn the boat around, and then I had to explain to her, well, I'm sorry, honey, but everyone else pay to go whale watching. So now I'm explaining capitalism to an 8-year-old while she's throwing up. So that is a tough sell. And then by the time we get to the place where the whales are supposed to be, my wife and I are at a point with our seasickness where we are not throwing up, but 100% of our consciousness is devoted to not throwing up. That's all we could. I think we've all been there at some point from drinking where, you know, you're just hanging onto a pole kind of... I'm okay, don't touch me. And then that's when the guide says, well, there's a whale off the right-hand side of the boat. So, of course, we're all, I would love to see that whale. And then you get over there and you see the tail of a whale, a huge whale, it's about 200 yards away, but the tail goes up and then boom, you're right, classic. And I thought, well, this is awesome, let's go look at that whale. And then the guide says, no, they're usually down for 2 hours after that behavior. Right, like he's, well, so we saw that whale, and I'm like, well, I didn't really get a good look at it. And then he says we have to go find more whales, and he said we saw two more whales. I'm pretty sure one of those was a bag. But by the end, you don't want to get off the boat. You're like, just high five, that was a whale. Let's go back. And then by the time you get home, you realize what a dumbass you are, right? Because we all have a TV full of whales right in our house. You know, you can DVR whales on demand when you go home, right? And or you can take the guesswork out of it. That's what we did. We rented a National Geographic whale watching DVD, which I recommend. It's 2 hours of nonstop whale. Every minute of the DVD has a whale. Even when there's a guy talking, there's a whale behind him. Like, well, I'm still here. And yeah, if you want to feel like you went whale watching, just open a can of tuna while you're watching the DVD and give it a sniff. Because, yeah. It smells just like the ocean. And then if you want to, you know, you can put your fingers in there. Oh, that was a big wave. Or if you want to be 100% authentic, you just throw 50 bucks out the window and make yourself puke on the rug. Yeah, you just went whale watching.
That was Jake Johansson with a piece called Whale Watching from one of his record-setting appearances on The Letterman Show. Coming up at 11 on WNF is Rob Lori and Radioactivity. Rolling into the noon hour constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, with contributions from members of the stellar WMNF staff, including, of course, Everyday Ethics with Craig Kott. Meanwhile, the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a Talking Animals t-shirt right now. Let's do a little bit of animal news and announcements, including this one from Dogma Pet Rescue, saying that tomorrow, Thursday, December 8th, they'll be painting with a twist. So the painting starts at 7 p.m., but they urge you to arrive 15, 20 minutes early to get a glass of wine. Hey, what kind of painting session is this? Anyway, so that's Thursday, again, December 7th, tomorrow, at 1993 West Lumsden Road, Brandon. And you can find out more at dogmarescue.org. Now, I'm not going to read this story, but just the headline or subhead from the Daily Mail seemed notable. Exclusive. Man who punched out kangaroo is a zookeeper. Elephant keeper Taronga says he was only trying to divert the roo when it attacked his dog as bosses launch an investigation. Find out more about that if you're so inclined. One other thing on a more serious note, especially with New Year's Eve just around the corner. Read a little bit of this from San Jose Mercury News. Every July 4th, Augie, a 4-year-old Chihuahua mix, would go into freakout mode. He trembled, he refused to eat, let sleep, or let anyone pick him up. His owners tried giving him Xanax for the fireworks phobia. Didn't work. Anyways, cut to treatables, cannabis chews have changed everything for this dog and many others that have freaked out in the wake of fireworks and other noise on New Year's Eve and, of course, 4th of July. So you might want to check that out. It's time now for Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway. Please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. There'll be a prize, a Talking Animals t-shirt. The first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
As I did walk by Hampstead Fair, I came upon Mother Goose. So I turned her loose as she was screaming. And a foreign student said to me,
all right, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Thanks so much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. I hope you'll join me again today at 1 p.m. when I'll be subbing for Scott Elliott on the All Souls edition of It's the Music. That's 1 to 3:30 p.m. right here on WMNF Tampa. Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Homegrown, handpicked music and news. NPR News is next, and then Rob Leroy with Radioactivity. Thanks.